Hello, I'm Curtis Bowers, and this is Agenda Weekly. Thank you so much for joining me again this week. I really appreciate it. Those of you watching on all the different platforms, thank you. Please like, please share, please comment, and do your part to keep spreading the truth. We really appreciate it. We'd also like to encourage you to consider going to agendaweekly.com and becoming one of our subscribers to help support what we're doing. But today I've got a special topic and a special guest. We're going to be talking about the Marxist greatest tool. You know what it is? The single greatest tool they have to make sure they have a Bolshevik forever. We're going to talk about that today with Alex Newman. Let me tell you a little bit about him. He's a good friend of mine. And I was looking at his resume online, and I go, well, I can either talk to him about what's going on, or I can just read his resume. But he's got so many things God has allowed him to do, to stand for the truth, to make a difference. But a few nuggets that stuck out to me. He's an award-winning international journalist, educator, author. That's how I've gotten to know him over the years. He's written for about any conservative publication you're aware of. You've probably read his articles. You probably already know who he is. But he's just doing so much to educate and inform and change things in the right direction, which I'm so thankful for that. Another thing he does, which I thought was interesting, he is the foreign correspondent for the New American Magazine. Now, I don't know how many of you have seen Foreign Correspondent, the old movie, but I didn't know, Alex, if your little code name is Huntley Haverstock or not, but it's from an old classic movie called Foreign Correspondent that most of my listeners, I'm sure, have seen. But it's neat because he, over the last many years, has been able to go over when they're doing the Rio Summit in Brazil, or when they're World Economic Forum's meeting, or different things. He's been able to go and be there in person and see what's going on and listen and understand. So in my opinion, Alex Newman is one of the most well-rounded, educated people on understanding the times from a biblical worldview, but from a Marxist-Leninist worldview, understanding who they are and what they have done and what they are currently doing to change us from within. He's also, a couple other interesting things, lived in 8 different countries. Just the perspective that gives you alone is tremendous. I've traveled a lot, but haven't lived in different countries, but it just helps broaden your understanding of people, of situations, of the way things work. He's also fluent in several languages, but most importantly, he is a husband and a father of, is it 4 still, or have you had number 5?
We got our newest one in January, so we've got 5 now.
5 now. I thought there was a new one. Anyway, I've met 4 of them, and sweet children that I've enjoyed spending time with. But one of the main reasons I love him is he is a brother in fighting for faith, family, and freedom. The same thing God has called me to do. It's what he's called Alex to do. And so that gives you a kind of a kindred spirit that's wonderful. But Alex, thank you so much for being on.
Thank you so much for having me, Curtis. And thank you very much for that kind introduction. That was very nice.
Oh, you're welcome. Well, what we're going to talk about again is the Marxist greatest tool. I'm going to read you one quote here to help you understand, our enemies understand, this is the greatest tool that we have. And then, Alex, I'd like you to comment on this and kind of talk about where have we come from? What was education supposed to be, and what are we transitioning into? But listen to this quote, people. It's very powerful. Give me 4 years to teach the children, and the seed I have sown will never be uprooted. Give us the children for 8 years, and it will be a Bolshevik forever. Give me just 1 generation of youth, and I'll transform the whole world. That, of course, was Vladimir Lenin, the founder of the Soviet Union. They understood the principle the Bible teaches is the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. The family was supposed to be the most single dominant influencer in the world by just raising the next generation and having the church be there with them, building strong families. But comment on that, Alex, and what, where we've come from and where we're heading.
Yeah, thank you, Curtis. And it's clear that throughout the last 100 years, all of the most murderous barbarians that you can think of understood that the route to obtain and then to consolidate total power ran right through the minds of the youth. And so that's why, for example, Adolf Hitler, the leader of the National Socialist Party, he was just obsessed with this. If you read his writings, he became the first leader in world history to officially criminalize home education. He said, parents, you cannot teach your children at home anymore. And then just to make sure, you know, he herded them all into the government's indoctrination centers called schools. And then after that, he made sure they participated in the Hitler Jugend and all the rest of it. He understood you got to drive a wedge between the parents and the children. You've got to cut off that transmission belt whereby values and faith, culture are transferred on to the next generation. Chairman Mao did, of course, exactly the same thing. And if you talk to people who either live in communist countries or former communist countries or who fled from there, and we've got a lot of them in America, people who fled from Eastern Europe, people who fled from China, from Vietnam, one of the common stories that you'll hear is, yes, they forced me to go to these indoctrination centers. They called it public school. And there they taught me that my parents were wrong, that everything prior to the revolution was evil and everything after the revolution was wonderful. They taught me that the state was basically the provider, the almost God. It's a very satanic, diabolical system, kind of like Hegel advocated, right? That the state should be a God with a little G. And the public school is the one that transcends all of the other issues. And Americans, I think, have this tendency, Curtis, to think that, well, our school system is different. But when you go back and look at the history, what you actually find is that the people who advocated for it, created it, engineered it, they were of a similar mind. John Dewey, Horace Mann, Robert Owen, they were all anti-God. They were all very collectivist in their worldview. And, I think it's something that the church, unfortunately, not just in America, but around the world, has not yet caught on to. Many Christians did realize as this was happening and they spoke out, but that all, of course, has been washed from the pages of history. And now we're in a situation where the overwhelming majority of Christians in America are sending their children to these indoctrination centers to get a quote unquote education. And the results are devastating. We see the fruit now.
Yeah, no, it's been amazing to see. And it's always like most things, it's through gradualism, one small step at a time. You wake up 50 years later to go, where are we? I mean, that's, I know a lot of you watching this are going, what's going on? We're at a point in our country, we're in the school system through the critical race theory and other things. They're teaching our children to hate our own country. I mean, it's kind of almost unheard of for people to do that, but that's where we are. But what was some of the main transitions that from getting a good education? I mean, a good education is being taught character and virtue and wisdom and understanding. That's how did we, when did it first start making significant steps forward out of that, where they had great logical thinking minds in debate and argument and to where we are today, where it is almost completely indoctrination with no core left of truth.
Yeah, it was, like you said, a very long process. One of the architects of the current system, John Dewey, he wrote this incredibly revealing essay called The Primary Education Fetish. And in there, he kind of makes the argument that we really don't need to be spending all this time and resources teaching kids how to read and write and do math and those kinds of things. What we really need is to properly socialize them so they'll be good little collectivists. And then he says in this essay, it's just the language of somebody who knows they're doing something evil. Change must come gradually. To force it unduly, he said, would compromise its final success by favoring a violent reaction. So when we first got government involved in education here in the United States, that was around late 1830s, early 1840s, when Horace Mann, a utopian who rejected the Bible, he rejected the faith of his forefathers, and viewed public school really in messianic terms. If you read his writings about it, if you look at his speeches, he talks about it as a tool to reform the character of mankind. You were going to kind of prove human nature. He had this incredibly naive vision that if he could just get the government to educate all the children, as he put it, we'd get rid of 9/10 of the laws in the law book, because we wouldn't need them. People would just be so wonderful, being molded by the benevolent hands of government. You know, the first person that I could find that really seriously advocated for government control over education was actually Plato. I know Plato, to people who don't really haven't read his writings, he gets kind of a you know, this idea that he's a wonderful philosopher. I mean, the guy was a raging totalitarian. He wanted the philosopher kings to rule over us for our own good. He wanted us to hand over our children to the state to be properly molded. But, you know, that really didn't take off in the Western world and Christian civilization, or really anywhere for that matter, for thousands of years, right? Throughout the history of Christendom, really parents were viewed as primarily responsible for the education of their children. And of course, that's what the Bible teaches over and over and over again, that parents are the primary ones responsible for the education of their children. And then the church had some supplemental role, right? The church played a role in creating schools and so on. But the understanding was always that the purpose of education was to, as you said, teach children character, teach children right from wrong. I love Harvard University's original mission statement. They said that that everybody needs to understand the main end of your life and your studies is to know God and Jesus Christ, which is eternal life. That was the main purpose of your education. How far we have fallen now. So it really picks up again, Curtis, with a guy, he's very little known today. His name was Robert Owen. He was actually advocating for communism long before Karl Marx came along. He wrote the series of essays on the proper formation of the human character. And he argued, he really believed many of the same things that Marx believed. He wanted to get rid of private property. He thought that children should be reared by the collective as soon as they could be taken from their parents. He thought maybe 2 to 3 years old, you take them from their parents, and then the collective will raise them. And he set up a colony, this weird commune, to try out these ideas called New Harmony in Indiana. And naturally, it was a failure. Of course, communism is a total contradiction of everything that God teaches. God teaches private property. God teaches if you don't work, you don't eat. It's unless you're a widow or orphan, or you can't for some reason. And so he tried to implement this society based on anti-biblical principles, and it was a disaster. And his conclusion was, of course, also a disaster. It was, well, if we had just gotten the kids early enough, if we could have had the government educate them, then everything would have worked well. So he wrote these essays, and really they were very silly. Americans didn't pay much attention. He talks about this in his autobiography. It's so interesting, Curtis. He says that these essays were picked up by the Prussian ambassador and taken back to the Prussian dictator. And he says that the Prussian dictator so approved of these that he ordered his interior minister to set up this system there. Long story short, the Prussian dictatorship implements, for the first time in human history that I can find, a statist government-controlled education system where parents are told to hand their children over to the state for education. And then Horace Mann comes along. I mentioned him briefly. He loves these ideas. And he brings them into Massachusetts. Now, we don't have a direct link between Robert Owen and Horace Mann, but we do know some really interesting things about Robert Owen. There was a guy who was involved with this movement. His name was Orestes Brownson, and he eventually came to Christ, and he repented of his involvement in this wicked, wicked operation. So he blew the whistle. He wrote a book about this, Liberal Orations, and he talks about how Robert Owen set up a secret society, is the term that Orestes Brownson uses, modeled on the Carbonari in Europe, with two primary objectives. The first was to shift public opinion in favor of government education. The second was to get men elected in the legislatures so that they could have government take over education. Very nefarious. And Orestes Brownson says, the reason I knew about this is because I organized a considerable part of New York for this society. And he says the ultimate goal, and I'm quoting here, the great object was to get rid of Christianity. He said we wanted a system first of state and the national schools where all religion would be excluded. Churches then would become these great halls of science and so on. So Horace Mann picks this up from Prussia, implements it. He actually travels to Prussia, loves what's going on there, implements this system in Massachusetts. Right away, it becomes a disaster. So when he leaves, he goes and he travels across America preaching the good news of government schools. And then, 50 years later, John Dewey comes in, picks up the architecture that Horace Mann had unleashed on America and weaponizes it further. He actually goes to the Soviet Union. John Dewey does. He just marvels at their education system. He said he just can't believe how great it's doing, producing what he calls a collectivistic mentality. And you know, the rest is history. So from that point on, it kept getting worse and worse. But as Dewey said, it had to happen slowly, because if they had just come out and said, hey, guys, we're going to turn all your children against God, against your family, we're going to make them hate America so we can have a socialist utopia, they literally would have been tarred and feathered. So it took, you know, 150 years to get where we are now. But by gradual steps, indoctrinating one generation a little more than the previous one, we have now gotten ourselves in the mess that we're in.
Yeah, and that's so important for people to understand. I think we always want to give people the benefit of the doubt, where our mind is, oh, they couldn't really mean to be doing these things. But you have to understand, this was an agenda. This was a plan that's been methodically implemented for over 100 years. Their plan was to get us to exactly where we are. The kids aren't being taught anything about anything, and most of what they're being taught is the opposite of the truth. So there's total confusion, there's brainwashing, and that's was the point of the government school system. That's what you have to realize. I know we think, it couldn't be that bad. It is. People that have a lust for power and control always work themselves into positions of influence, because just like Lenin said, they want the future they want. And they know if they want that future, they have to have the children on their side. You have to have the children or you have nothing. And that's what I think our side's starting to wake up to. And we'll talk more about that at the very end. But if we don't keep our own children on our side, there's not much point to what we are doing, because we have to have someone to continue this on after we are gone, to keep our ideas and our beliefs and our traditions and things going. So it's hard to even, when I hear this and I've studied this, it is amazing how persistent they have been, how patient to you know, just make a little progress at a time. A lot of them wouldn't even see it in their lifetime. Like John Dewey didn't get to see what he was working toward, which is now there. But they were so committed satanically to this. And so why is failure? So not only are they teaching them so many things that are in error, but why is the point of them getting a good education, math and science and history, why can they not allow them to get a good education?
Well, I think the real crux of the issue is that if you have even a handful of children who do have a good education and can see through the lies, it risks upsetting the whole entire society. I love the story of the little boy who points out that the emperor had no clothes. You know, nobody wanted to say anything. Everyone just, oh, okay, yeah, those are nice clothes, Mr. Emperor. And then all it took was that one little boy to say, the guy's naked. What's wrong with you people? I mean, look, he's naked. Can't you see? And suddenly everybody was like, oh, wow, he really is naked. And so we have a situation where the education establishment recognizes that if they allow certain children to become highly educated, they will see through the contradictions in the system. I mean, if you train a child in logic, if you train a child in the scientific method, you can't then turn around and tell them that they came from slime via monkeys and that's a fact and can't be challenged. You can't tell them that gender is a spectrum and that there could be infinite genders. You can't tell them that the gas that they exhale is a toxic pollution that's going to cook the planet unless they repent of their carbon sins and pay the UN a tax, because they would look at that and say, that's ludicrous. That's not logical. That's not scientific. I mean, you can do it, you know, the scientific method. This just doesn't add up. And so, you know, I want to make clear to people, too, this isn't just you and I saying this, Curtis. If people go look at the government's own data, they will very proudly tell you that your children are dumb as a box of rocks. You know, if you look at, for example, their National Assessment of Educational Progress, they put this out every 2 years. Less than one third of the victims of government schools are proficient in any core subject. And that's the government's data, right? That means math, that means reading, that means writing, that means science, that means history, civics. They're not proficient in anything. And I'm talking less than a third. And by proficient, you know, anybody who received a reasonable education would look at what they consider proficient and would laugh, right? I mean, it's just absolutely ridiculous that they could call that proficient, and yet not even a third of our children are reaching that goal. We're spending $1 trillion a year on so-called education, and we are graduating millions and millions of children who can't read their high school diploma, who wouldn't know math if it was a snake and bit them in the face. What they do know is the false religion of humanism, right? This idea that man can be his own little god and we can decide for ourselves what's right and wrong. There is no transcendent morality. They know that America is evil. They know that their parents are old-fashioned and outmoded. They know that Christianity is mean and tyrannical because it won't give them all the, you know, sexual freedom that they want to have. That's what they graduate knowing. And again, I think the reason why they're so vicious when it comes to making sure that children don't learn anything useful, like reading, I'll put it like this. I guess each subject has kind of its own rationale, but the reason they don't want the children reading, I think, is very simple. And the earliest education law we ever had in America hits the nail on the head. It was called the Old Deluder Satan Act. This was in Massachusetts Bay Colony, 1647. And the premise of the statute, it starts off by saying that that Old Deluder Satan, one of his chief projects is to keep men from knowledge of the scriptures. And I think that's exactly why they want people illiterate. If you can't read, you can't read the Bible. If you can't read the Bible, you don't have an objective source of truth by which you can measure everything else. You don't know what the true character of God. You don't know his revealed laws. So I think that's the main objective. Then as a secondary objective, if you can't read, you can't read the Constitution. You can't open up a history book. You can't read real science. Now, why would they not want them to know math? Well, math is the universal language of God. It's perfect. You can't have children understanding that, so we use Common Core math. Why would they not want them to know history? Well, George Orwell explained it pretty clearly, right? In his book, 1984, whoever controls the past controls the present, and whoever controls the present controls the future. That's why they need, and it's the same reason that Chairman Mao was so brutal in suppressing history. They had to tear down the statues. They had to burn the history books in the library. They had to shoot the history professors in the head, because if that knowledge were transmitted, it'd be hard to tell people that you came from this horrible society and that the revolution improved everything, when in fact the opposite was true. So that's, I think, the real issue. They don't, and people struggle to understand this. They think maybe that it was just an accident that the schools kind of went off the rails and got broken, and they were at least trying. No. You need to understand the purpose was to dumb down your children, and they've done a very good job at fulfilling their purpose.
Boy, have they. It's pretty amazing. And they knew, too, John Dewey kind of really implementing it. The one-room schoolhouse had to go, because you need the age-segregated peer grouping to be able to really indoctrinate, to really brainwash. Because when you're 12 years old and all you hang around is 12-year-olds that are just as ignorant as you are, of course, then there's no one to get any wisdom from, or no one younger to give any wisdom to. There's no accountability. And so that was a key strategy of Marxism, to segregate everything off, where then you're not only dividing the old from the young, you're dividing everyone into individual age brackets. So a 12-year-old's not even learning from a 13-year-old, because, oh, you're not in my class, I can't talk to you. And so that's what I've seen. One of the biggest things I've noticed is it's hard to even communicate with them because they're not used to talking to someone older, so they can't even look at you when they talk. I love young people, so I go up and talk to them wherever I am. And the ones that are in the government school system have lost the ability to communicate with someone that's not exactly their age, which is deadly, because then they're never going to get that wisdom from above. So I know I've seen that. Talk about for a minute why the strategy of making them immoral was so important. That's such a big part of education today, is to make sure at the youngest age possible, they believe if it feels good, do it. Anything, for any reason, at any time. Why is that a key Marxist strategy?
Yeah, there are several things happening here, Curtis, and people need to understand that schools are deliberately trying to have your children reject morality on a fundamental level. I think, you know, I separate the effort to make children believe that morality is subjective and depends on the situation from the sexual revolution component. So I'll start with the sexual revolution part. 100 years ago, Marxist theorists started understanding that the best way to break down individual liberty and civilization and the divine order was to attack the family. And specifically to have men and women be promiscuous, to try to break down, the idea that the order that God established for a family, and also the raising of children by parents, and also the religious training of children. And so you had two people that are really, really significant in this. You had a psychiatrist, a quack psychiatrist, a disciple of Sigmund Freud, who actually joined the Communist Party, became a Marxist, by the name of Dr. Reich. And he really passionately believed that the best way to implement Marxism in the West was to get rid of fathers, have the family unit interrupted. And that's why he believed we should sexualize the children from the youngest possible ages. There was another man who was pursuing that same idea, and he actually served as a deputy commissar of education and culture in the Bela Kun regime in Hungary. His name was Georgi Lukacs. A vile, vile man. He was exposing children, 5, 6, 7 years old to pornography, to the most grotesque kinds of sexual perversions you can imagine. And the reason why, again, was to break down the family, to break down children's, modesty, and ultimately to facilitate the bulldozing of Western civilization, to destroy the old, to turn children into kind of a blank slate that the communists could write on, rather than this vessel that parents had already filled with knowledge and information. Information and wisdom and values and beliefs and so on. So that's really the origins of it. You fast forward to Alfred Kinsey. He's the guy who laid the pseudoscientific justification for this. The guy was one of the most vile human beings to have ever walked on this planet. He was probably responsible for the rape and sexual torture of thousands of little children. Even some babies just a few months old. And he took meticulous notes and all this under the guise of research and came up with this absurd claim that children are sexual beings from birth. And naturally, he was funded by the Rockefellers, just like John Dewey before him. And so I think the reason why they're trying to sexualize the children has been to break down the family. Now they're plowing new ground with this whole transgenderism. And again, I think there's several things at work here. Well, with the homosexuality, they started making the argument that, well, children don't really need a mom and a dad, right? I mean, two dads can do it or two moms can do it. And so that was extreme and outrageous enough. Now they're going a whole nother step further by telling us that, well, there isn't really a such thing as moms and dads. That's just a social construct that people invented. Gender is actually a spectrum, and you can be a man and give birth to a baby. I mean, if you go to Google right now and type in, can a man give birth to a baby? Maybe Google will tell you, oh, yes, a man can give it. I mean, it's absolutely ludicrous, but that's what they're teaching our children. And then there is the effort to destroy an understanding of right and wrong. And I think the reason for this is also simple. If children believe there is right and wrong, a divine order revealed to mankind by God, lying is wrong, murder is wrong, stealing is wrong, how can you possibly implement a utopia based on lying, murder, and stealing? It's just you can't have both at the same time. And so they've got to convince children that morality is this outmoded idea that their silly, uncool parents believe in, but that now we're older and wiser, and we understand that that's nonsense. And they have very, very sophisticated ways of bringing this about, Curtis. And I remember it when it was done to me. One of the guys who was responsible for inventing these kinds of tactics would brag that in 1 hour they could undo everything parents had tried to instill in their children in 16 years. And parents have no idea where to start with this, but so they use what's called values clarification. The UN actually promotes this around the world, and they tell you one of the reasons why they promote it is to undermine children's beliefs in moral absolutes. And so they give children these seemingly impossible situations where you're in a life raft and you're all going to drown unless you throw somebody overboard and kill them because the life raft can only hold 10 people and you've got 11 in there. And so the children think, well, this is a real moral dilemma, right? My parents said we shouldn't murder people, and that's what the Bible said. But here, obviously, it's ethical. We have to do it. It's for the greater good. And so what happens, the parents are discredited, the Bible is discredited, and the children come to believe that they're so smart, and they believe that they came to this conclusion on their own, that morality is subjective. What they don't realize is that they were very carefully manipulated into believing that. And if they had just thought outside the box a little bit, there would have been other solutions, like, for example, swimming alongside the raft and taking turns, while one is out there, and then we rotate. That way nobody has to die. So it's very, very nefarious. It's very strategic. There's a specific set of reasons why they want this, and they've become masters at it. If you look at the polling data now, it's such a tiny minority in America that still believes in right and wrong, in objective moral principles. It's a tragedy. And I think that explains what we're seeing in our culture right now, the mass murder of unborn babies, the collapse of the family, the rioting in the streets, the idea that everyone's entitled to other people's stuff. It all comes from this indoctrination in the public schools to get children to reject clear understandings of right and wrong.
That's right. No, and Wilhelm Reich, who you were talking about from the Frankfurt School, here's a quote. Listen to this. This is one other key element in pushing immorality. He said this, quote, "We as communists used to debate people about the existence of God. And after a while, I came to a conclusion that this was a waste of time. You aren't going to debate people away from the existence of God." Now listen to this. "But what we found was that if you get people involved in deviant sexual behavior, the whole idea of God just disappears automatically." Do you understand what he's saying? He's saying if you get them immoral where they're being sinful, they don't want there to be a God. So God will start to disappear because they're like, their conscience is getting them and they're guilty because they know they're doing what is wrong. And so the only alternative then is to reject God completely. Although I don't believe in God. I don't believe, because you don't want to believe in him. But that's how this, that's from the mid 1930s. Again, that's 90 years ago. That's how they were thinking. Okay, this is how we're going to get it. And what are we waking up today to? Our five-year-olds being taught things that it would be embarrassing as adults to even take a look at or to read about. I was up in Minnesota not that long ago, and they had a new book that had passed and was being used in the elementary schools called It's All Natural. And they opened it up to show it to me. And I said, no, I do not want to be defiled by looking at that. And it showed with art every possible evil, wicked, vile thing you could do with anything and anyone. And it was unbelievable. And they go, this has already been, the legislature okayed it, and this is in our schools. Well, people, listen, when people are purposefully destroying the hearts and minds and souls of the children, we've got big problems. I mean, we have to stop it. We have to do whatever we can do, because God hates that. I mean, he cannot stand when the innocence and purity and specialness of a child that he just made them the way they are is defiled by the filth and the perversions and the sickness of this world. So, Alex, there's so much more we could talk about, but I think you all get the idea. It's purposeful. It's an agenda. It's been 100 years in the making, and they are moving toward the final stages of that. So a couple questions, Alex, is this, and this is important. Like you said earlier, the same reason America needs to go for the world, you can't have world government when America's the city on a hill. I mean, you can't have the comparison where people go, we want to be like America instead of having world government. Well, the same thing like you talked about, you cannot have homeschoolers up here and what the government schools are putting out down here and them to allow that to go on very long, because it exposes the failure of their system. The very fact that the homeschooler can smile, look you in the eyes, be happy, have intelligent questions to ask you, shows what they're doing isn't working. If that wasn't there, then they could say, oh, well, kids today are just dumb, or kids today are just immoral. But when there's the comparison, so a couple things on that. And I know a big part of your heart and mission is to get children out of the government schools. So talk for a minute about, do you think persecution is going to be coming here at some point to the homeschooling community, because they've got to stop from being exposed for what a failure they are, but also how important, of course, it is to homeschool. What can people be doing to stand up against this and to make a difference right now where they are?
Yeah, thank you, Curtis. And I think this is just so crucial for people to understand. I don't think persecution is coming. I know it's coming. We've seen it. My wife and I were living in Sweden, and the persecution started there. In 2011, they started debating this education reform law. And it was a multifaceted piece of legislation. And one of the things that it did was force all the private schools to teach the government's indoctrination. Starting in first grade, the kids had to learn that gender was a social construct, that homosexuality was just an acceptable, fun, alternative lifestyle. All the private schools, all of them, Christian schools, didn't matter. They all had to teach the same garbage, total ban on the Bible, total ban on prayer. I called the education minister, like, what are you guys doing? And oh, well, all children have a human right to education. And so in this same legislation, they banned homeschooling. They said all children from the age of, I believe it was 7 years old and up, must be handed over either to the state directly or to one of the state's approved agents that will provide the same sort of filthy, nasty indoctrination program as the state. And it's mandatory. And if you don't comply, we will remove your children and destroy your family. I saw it happen with my own two eyes. It's one of the reasons, one of the main reasons we had to flee from Sweden. That's just unacceptable. The state doesn't own our children. So we saw it there. It really began in earnest under Adolf Hitler, the National Socialist monster who slaughtered millions of people, invaded Poland, invaded France. I mean, what a mess this guy made of the world with his crazy ideas. And again, his focus was on getting the children. So he criminalized homeschooling. They denazified Germany after World War II because of the abominations that took place there. But unfortunately, they didn't overturn the ban on homeschooling. Now we're seeing the dominoes starting to fall. Just this year, France has gone and banned homeschooling. Just a couple months ago, Portugal was working on a homeschool ban. Obviously, the communist dictatorships have already gone there. The China, North Korea, Cuba, you can't educate your children there. And they're already laying the foundation for the siege right here in America. Last summer, some of the brightest, and I use that term in air quotes, some of the brightest legal minds in the nation were going to convene to plot their war on homeschooling. They were going to be convening at Harvard University at the law school there under the guidance of a lady by the name of Elizabeth Barthollet, a law professor, the leader of the Child Advocacy Program, who had just finished publishing a paper in the Arizona Law Review arguing for a presumptive ban on homeschooling. And when the Ivy League universities like Harvard, like Yale, like William and Mary, her sidekick, James Dwyer from William and Mary, has actually argued that we need to dispense with the idea of parental rights. There are no parental rights. He says the only reason there's a relationship between parent and child is because the state confers this on families through the paternity and maternity laws. So they're coming for us. The question is, how soon and how do we prepare? I think sooner rather than later. I'd be very surprised if we didn't start seeing some very, very loud efforts on this front this summer. I suspect they're probably waiting for a perfect opportunity, just like they do with the gun control. They wait for some kind of tragedy. They want to find that one family out of a million that, maybe their child didn't get a good education or God forbid, maybe they were abused or something like that. They're going to put that on the front page of every newspaper. You're going to see it endless cycle on CNN to try to turn the public against homeschooling. And they won't start right away by saying we're going to ban homeschooling. They'll say, oh, we just need common sense regulation. We just need some accountability. We just need to make sure those children are being well cared for. That's how it'll start. That'll be the camel's nose under the tent. It's coming. The UN has been making noises on this front. Actually, in 2015, the UN Human Rights Council, which incidentally is controlled by mass murdering dictators, true story, they passed a resolution decrying private schools and all these unregulated private schools teaching whatever they want to children. They said government needs to step in, they need to monitor and they need to regulate. All the children need to learn from the same standards, is what they said in this resolution. So they are coming. It's not a question of if, it's just a question of when and how do we prepare. I feel incredibly blessed to be here in Florida. We just last weekend had the Florida Parent Educator Association conference. Our dear governor, Ron DeSantis, spoke there and thanked the homeschooling community, expressed his very strong support for homeschooling. So it'll probably start in states like Massachusetts, in states like Illinois, where actually homeschooling is very free right now in Illinois, but that may not be the case much longer. California, you see the noose starting to close. But I encourage parents, first of all, if you have children in the public schools, I hope you don't. But if you do, I use the analogy of a burning building. If your children are in the burning building, treat it like it's a burning building. You know, you don't start a petition, you don't run for school board, you don't go lobby your legislator. You get your children out of the burning building. Then you do those other things, right? First things first, you got to rescue your child. And honestly, it's worse than a burning building, right? The Bible tells us, you know, don't worry as much about the one that can kill the body. Worry about the one that can kill the body and your soul in hell, right? There's worse things than physical death. And you know, the fire will just hurt the children physically. What's happening here is they're being destroyed emotionally, mentally, academically, and most importantly, spiritually. You know, we do need to understand homeschooling won't save your children. Jesus Christ saves your children. That is, of course, clear. But you can really give your children a solid education. In fact, it's not optional. You have a duty to do this as a parent. Yeah, you can delegate some of that, but not to anti-Christian, God-hating fanatics dedicated to destroying your children. Jesus expresses it very clearly twice in the Gospels. He says that if you're not with me, you're against me. And I dare somebody to try to say that the public schools are with Christ, right? You'd look like an absolute fool. You cannot possibly make that argument. And so if the schools are not with Christ, that leaves one option, and you don't want your children in there. And don't tell me that your kids are going to be salt and light. I'm sorry if I sound harsh, but your kids aren't going to be salt and light. Your kids are at best child soldiers in a war, a spiritual war, where they are massively outgunned, massively outtrained. You know, it would be just as foolish as sending your kids to Iraq with a M16, right? You'd be an idiot to do that. And again, I know I sound harsh, but I just want to emphasize, parents, you got to get your kids out. And then, you know, I this is really common in the homeschool community. Well, my kids are out, and so now we're safe. Now we don't have to worry about it. No, you do need to worry about it. Join your state homeschool association. Join the national homeschool associations. Pay your dues. Get involved at the local level. If your legislator isn't a strong supporter of homeschooling, you either need to educate them or you need to find a new legislator, because the war is coming. And if we're not prepared, we're going to get caught off guard. There'll be the emotion. They say, oh, the poor kid was abused. Let's regulate homeschooling. And so we've got to be ready before that happens.
That's right. No, and don't be overwhelmed by the idea of it. I know I'm talking to a wide variety of people. Some of you, if your kids have already grown, then you seek to try to turn your grandchildren in that direction. If you realize that's not going to happen, then people that you share the information you share with, these videos, the books you share, I know you're all activists, every single one of you, the people you wake up as you give them good information, this is a piece of the puzzle you need to give them to say, hey, have you thought about your kids in the schools, and start educating them on what's really going on, because every child you can pull out of that system and then really educate that so they understand truth and they're wise and they have the discernment. They're another person on our side standing for the truth in this battle. And then through the homeschooling process, if it's done right, they'll be prepared to stand in this battle. And they'll have the courage to stand in this battle because they won't be so used to all the peer pressure because they've been pulled out of that world that just sucks them into obedience. You must do it the way we do it, or we'll tease you, we'll mock you, we'll bully you. And we need to say no thank you to that. This is something that as a homeschooling father is so important to me. I know it's important to Alex. That's why I had him on. But be praying about this, what you could do to reach young people with the truth. We're not going to fix the government school system. We're not going to. It doesn't mean it's not wrong to try to make things better, but you're not going to fix it because it is accomplishing exactly what it was intended to accomplish. You have to understand that. It's turning out exactly the type of young person it was wanting to turn out. It's not failing. It's being 100% successful in what its mission was. And so you have to know that. But anyway, Alex, how will people get a hold of you? What's a good site where they can get your books and things from you, where you don't have to give half of it to Amazon or whatever? What's the way they can get a hold of you?
Well, thank you so much, Curtis. And my personal website is libertysentinel.org. You can order any books or any DVDs or anything I've done right there, libertysentinel.org/books or /donate. There's instructions there. Also, we've started a new ministry. We've gotten together with some of the brightest and best educators, lawyers, journalists, teachers, professors, and we've created a ministry called Public School Exit. So if you're a parent and you're on the fence about this, you need resources, you wonder where to start, go to publicschoolexit.com. You can find that there. We've also done a special report in the New American Magazine. It's called Rescuing Our Children. You can find that at thenewamerican.com/rescuingourchildren. If you use the promo code EDUCATE19, we'll pay the shipping and handling and get you a copy. If you like it, you can distribute it to your pastor, your elders. And we do have a sequel coming out this summer. It should be ready within less than a month now, because you know we put this special report out in early 2019. Things have gotten so much worse now, 2 years later, that we needed to do an update. So that'll be available very soon. And I hope people will check it out, folks. I tell people this is the battle. You know, all the other battles that we're fighting are important. You know, the gun rights and stopping the slaughter of unborn babies and reducing the size and scope of government, reigning in the globalism, stopping the Marxist revolution. Those are all important things. But the one strand that runs through every one of those is education. And if we fail on this one, it's over on all the rest of them. It's that simple. So I hope people will get involved. Curtis, I appreciate you having me on, and thank you for all the work that you're doing. And especially thank you for sounding the alarm about this issue. It's just so critical. We've got the momentum now. You know, we've got the homeschool population has more than doubled in the last year. We've got some of the top leaders in America. We have, you know, Franklin Graham recently told people to get their kids out of the schools. Rush Limbaugh twice or three times before he died told people to get their children out of schools. President Trump said, we've got to protect our children from these failing government schools. So the wind is in our sails now. Let's seize this incredible once in a lifetime opportunity. And I hope people will share out this video. And thanks again for having me, Curtis. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you so much, Alex. So people go to the sites that I have on the screen there to get information from Alex, support what he's doing. It's important that we stand with those that are standing up, or no one's going to be standing up because they won't be able to afford to. So get some resources there. The New American, as you know, that's one of the three things I recommend everyone to get. The New American Magazine. If you haven't subscribed to that, please do that. I think it is vital to help you understand issues at a deeper level. And Alex is very much intertwined there with the New American. But that's one of the number one things I push everywhere I go because it's so valuable. I look forward to it coming. I mean, twice a month. But people, don't be discouraged. Like he was talking about there at the end, homeschooling has doubled just in the last year. So what they meant for evil, God meant for good. We need to take the momentum of this, where people start to see more and more of the difference. And they realize, I want my kids to turn out like this. That's why I homeschooled. I'd met so many nice kids. And whenever I said, where'd you go to school? They'd go, I'm homeschooled. I go, I came home one day to my wife and said, we're going to homeschool our kids. And she said, why? I said, because every kid I meet that I really like, they say they're homeschooled. And so the proof is in the pudding. But thank you. Please get the resources he talked about. Educate others and be faithful. And don't be discouraged, because we're on the winning side. But just do what God has asked you to do, and he can do the miracle of everything else. But until next week, thank you so much for joining me, and God bless you.